Welcome to Same Here Man,
where it's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
I am Lucy Mills.
And I'm Francine Mills.
And today we're going to dive into a topic that I've had on the back burner for a long time, but it seems like the right time. And that topic is childhood ruiners.
Boy.
What I mean when I say childhood ruiners is just a shorthand for something that you are really nostalgic about, something you attach a lot of childhood magic to, that when you look at it again as an adult, it really loses its luster. Mm-hmm. And it really falls out of that kind of beloved category for you, and you're not quite sure what to do with it.
Yeah, it's like quite a few 90s sitcoms.
Yeah.
Where, like, the jokes didn't really age very well. And you're like, oh, I'm uncomfy.
Yeah, exactly. Where you look back and you're like, oh, I laughed at this, but that person's wearing a fat suit, and that's mm-hmm, just, like, mm-hmm. so unnecessary and irrelevant and gross.
Yeah.
One example that I use a lot is when you rewatch The Little Mermaid as an adult. Mm. You know what I'm talking about?
I haven't watched that in a hot minute, and that was, like, one of my favorites growing up.
Perfect example. If it's one of your favorites growing up, and then you rewatch it as an adult, you see that it's this super minor girl mm-hmm. begging her dad to let her leave and go live her life because she loves this man who is, like, of a knowable age or whatever. And it's a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
And you watch it as an adult and you're like, ooh, honey.
Not to mention that the dad is just kind of awful.
Well, that's a different episode.
Oh, yeah.
Can you take a stab as to what our subject matter is going to be today? The hint is it's something that is kind of blowing the fuck up right now.
Well, I know a new game came out.
You're getting warm.
I forget the subtitle, but it's Harry Potter related.
You're getting hotter. You're on fire.
Yeah. Lately, I've just been seeing a lot of TikTok videos how you think the game's gonna go. And it's like this person going around doing, Avada Kedavra, Avada Kedavra, Avada Kedavra.
Amazing.
And instead, in reality, it's like, Revelio, Revelio, ooh, another coin, Revelio, god damn it.
Yes, you nailed it. We are going to be talking about the shit show that is J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter, and the video game is Hogwarts Legacy.
Yay.
So this is my proposal for this episode, and I have to be really clear with it because this is a subject that I don't super want to be talking about. It makes me feel pretty gross, and we'll get into why that is. It might not be for the reasons that you expect.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about what the wizarding world is. We're going to talk about what J.K. Rowling is. And we're going to talk about the sinister undertones that go along with all of that. The main focus of this episode is not going to be why you shouldn't buy this game. I obviously feel that way. You're going to feel whatever way you feel. You're probably not going to listen to a podcast to change your mind, and I respect that. You're a free thinker.
Yeah, I don't think we're here necessarily to deter anybody from enjoying what they enjoy.
What I am going to focus on is this really interesting topic of what do you do when a thing that you love or a thing that you spent a lot of time with as a child becomes dirtied? What do you do with that? Because it's really difficult. What do you do with the memory of something that you hold really dear when going back to it kind of makes you feel gross?
Yeah, kind of a bummer.
So let's start off with what the Wizarding World is.
Ooh.
Frank, what do you know about Harry Potter?
Well, when I was growing up, I was actually told by Lou to not read them.
By me? I was told by our parents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it kind of trickled down.
That's not a shocker.
You started telling me, no, don't read those. That's witchcraft and it's terrible.
Yeah, no, I was totally taught, like, they are demonic, they have spells in them, they will hurt you.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe it wasn't by mom and dad directly. Maybe it was the church.
Yeah.
But I definitely learned that from higher up
mm-hmm.
and thought I was doing doing the world and doing you a service by passing it on.
That was me with purity culture.
Ooh, gross.
Kind of pushing it on my friends and was like, ooh, buddy.
Gross.
Trying to get back on topic here. So, Harry Potter.
Yes.
When I started work, my manager was a huge Harry Potter fan. A Potterhead, if you will. And she was telling me about all the houses.
Okay.
You seem to be like a Hufflepuff, you know, because she was a Hufflepuff as well. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds cool. So then I got all the books in a huge bundle, $50. Oh. I was like, I'm going to read all these this year. And so I did, and I was like, man, these are actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
I can see why it's very popular.
Yeah.
The only movie that I watched before that was, I believe, the second one?
Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, that one. And then I took the quiz, and it turned out I was a Hufflepuff, so that's a W for my manager, I guess.
How old were you when you first read them?
I believe I was 17.
Okay.
It was, like, that summer.
All right. That's still a pretty nice, easy time to be nostalgic of. A lot of people are nostalgic for the summers of their late teen years.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So I, like you, because we grew up under the same roof, did not read Harry Potter growing up.
I mean, to be honest, you were more of a Twilight fan.
Oh, yeah. I loved Twilight. Sometimes I still have nostalgia for Twilight. I'm not going to lie.
But I remember one time you said you were reading them, and then all of a sudden you, like, threw it down on the ground. And you're like,
oh, yeah. I never finished reading the last book because Jesus told me to stop.
Yeah.
That's right. I should finish it, actually. I should read them again.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, the first time I read and encountered the Harry Potter universe was actually in college when I went to college, dropped out, went back in later in adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a summer class that I took with one of my favorite professors, who's a brilliant thinker.
Mm-hmm.
That whole course was around J.K. Rowling's work. And so we started off with some detective fiction, and I have never read as many books in as short a time as in that class. I think it was a 6-week class. We read all of the books except for one because we just didn't have enough time.
Oh, man.
And we didn't read Order of the Phoenix, so we didn't read number 5, I think.
I think I remember that one's kind of a slog to get through.
Yeah, it was skippable in the grand scheme of things. Sorry for everybody who's a huge fan of Order of the Phoenix. Anyway, we read a ton of source materials, we read some mythology, just to kind of get into the head of J.K. Rowling and see how she approached the series as an author, and really took it in good faith and studied the material as academia, as scholarly material. So I got a lot out of that class as a result of it, and I also had encountered the Harry Potter universe for the very first time, so it was a really cool way to experience it.
It's awesome. That was before all the tweets, right?
Yeah. So that's the big caveat, is this was before the tweets. But she still was doing anti-trans legislative work. She was an activist in that area as far as with her money and her campaigning.
She just wasn't as vocal.
Yeah, she wasn't necessarily involving herself so much in the fist fight that is Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
There was still a conversation around what do you do when the author is someone you really disagree with, and you maybe see it in her works, but you don't necessarily see it in her works.
Mm-hmm.
That conversation was present, but it wasn't as strong of a conversation as it probably would be today.
Yeah, that makes me think of another author. This is well before Twitter, H.P. Lovecraft.
Ooh, go on.
So he's, like, very famously known for, like, Cthulhu and, you know, like, very, cosmic horror sort of deals.
Yes.
And, you know, he's well revered for that, but also he was super racist.
Oh, yeah.
And you can tell in the books, because I think he mentions, like, how black people are, like, scum and women are stupid, like, you know, things like that.
You know, the use.
That icky sentiment.
Yes. And so how does that affect how you read Lovecraft today?
I actually don't read it.
So, and is it because of how terrible of a person Lovecraft is, or are you just not interested
in
his material?
So, like, I knew about Cthulhu and that whole spiel of, like, you know, horror things. I think I first knew about H.P. Lovecraft because of how racist he was.
Yeah, and that's almost more memorable than the stories if you haven't read the stories yet.
Yeah.
So H.P. Lovecraft is a really good parallel.
Yeah.
We might actually come back to that later on because of reasons. So by now, the listener will know that neither of us have a really big childhood-based nostalgia for Harry Potter. We are going to be talking about this particular case pretty objectively compared to people who grew up with the Wizarding World mm-hmm. and who have tons and tons and tons of childhood memories around it. And I'm not here to take any of that away from you. Absolutely you can not. Listen to this in good faith and know that I'm not going to bash on you for having really sweet memories of diving into Hogwarts in your brain mm-hmm. under the blankets as a little kid. I'm not going to take that away from you. Don't come for me. So next, let's talk about what J.K. Rowling is. Do you know anything about J.K. Rowling as a person?
I know that when she first started out, she was kind of poor.
Yeah, so she's kind of a rags-to-riches story,
for sure. Yeah, rags-to-riches, for sure. And I think that's all I know.
So her name is Joanne. She went by the pseudonym J.K. Rowling when she published her books because she correctly was under the impression that if you wrote under a woman's name, you were less likely to sell books, especially if you were trying to market to young boys. And the audience of Harry Potter was young boys because Harry Potter is a young boy.
Yep.
That all tracks pretty easily. She's also written under other pen names, especially as she branches out into other genres and doesn't necessarily want those works to be associated with the Harry Potter universe. Mm. She has always wanted to write detective fiction, and you can see a lot of the themes of detective fiction through her works.
Oh, yeah.
And you are correct in saying that she is kind of a rags-to-riches story. She wrote the first story as a single mother, kind of living in poverty. She actually had escaped an abusive marriage.
Oh, wow.
She is a survivor of domestic abuse. And she feels very, very, very strongly about women's rights as a result of it. The only problem is that her very, very strong feelings about women's rights kind of come at the expense of literally anything that she thinks gets in the way.
Buddy.
So what do you know about her problematic nature? There's a ton of content out there right now about people talking about why Harry Potter's bad and why J.K. Rowling's bad, and it's really easy to find. Yeah. I just want to know kind of what have you come across?
So I know that she has made some very controversial tweets saying that, like, you know, trans women are not real women and they don't deserve, you know, the same rights as quote-unquote real women. That just kind of threw me for a loop when I first heard that.
Okay.
Then she tweeted something else, replying to somebody who was like, how do you sleep at night? Or something like that. And she was like, very soundly with a paycheck in the mail or something like that. Like, yeah. Getting royalties in the mail. I was like, ew.
Yeah.
Most do I know. Here's another TikTok I saw, because I am a degenerate that just doom scrolls all day.
Like the rest of us, thank you very much.
But there was a video from somebody who was kind of pointing out the fact that the LGBTQ plus community really loved Harry Potter. I don't think it's the case now, but they really adored the IP, you know, they loved Hogwarts, they really related with, you know, Harry Potter, who was literally closeted in, like, underneath a staircase, and, you know, his family hated him, and then he turns out he's a wizard, you know?
Yeah, and they still don't accept him after that.
Yeah, and then he finds friends, you know, aka found family.
Yeah.
All of those tropes, they kind of, they really gel with the experiences of gay people.
Absolutely.
Not to mention trans people, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's probably exacerbated in that sort of situation because it's not just your sexuality. You're thinking of your gender identity, which is a completely different beast. You can't ridiculous that one away.
So along with the problematic tweets, she also, you know, she's a writer. So she writes more than just tweets, you know. She has written lengthy essays on the subject. I've read most of them, honestly. I wish I hadn't. I wish I could get that time of my life back. They're pretty hard to slog through because she does a lot of mental somersaults between I stand for trans rights and I think the trans people I know are lovely, but it shouldn't come at the expense of women's rights. She sees them as separate issues.
I would say it's like a different category of a similar issue.
Exactly. She wants them to be two totally different, distinct issues where nothing ever comes close to women's rights. And the problem is that trans women also need women's rights.
Wah, 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 wah.
She is in a weird gray area, and she fights like hell to keep it gray when it's really clearly not that nuanced. It would be more convenient under her platform and under her manifestos and under her worldview if trans people just didn't exist, because then it wouldn't be so fucking complicated for her to try and push this gender essentialism that she really fights for. That has become really hurtful to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And she has doubled down on it time and time again in ways that really kind of blow up the internet. And I do not think that that is accidental.
No.
No one that famous with that much power makes a ruckus on the internet just, you know, for fun or just accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
And there is absolutely no coincidence that a lot of this ruckus has happened around the release of this new game.
It sounds like we need a new term for it.
What do you mean?
I think of, like, Trump, he who must not be named.
Yeah.
The Trump paradox. You think you can say something very controversial and it doesn't really matter in the end, like what you say or do, because you're still going to have power, you're still going to have money, and you're still going to promote, you know, terrible laws that enforce your opinions, even though it's really hurtful to lots of groups of people that you think should not even exist.
It's the idea of, like, all press is good press, including, you know, shitty things in the tabloids. If people are talking about you, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, you're right. It's kind of like that concept, but a little bit dialed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Rowling knows how to play that game very well. She's a very wealthy woman. She knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the video game, because that is the new monster that people are really wringing their hands over.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wringing their hands over, like, should I get it? Should I not get it? If I get it, I have to kind of defend my position on getting it, or I kind of have to play it in secret because I'm afraid people will be mean to me, or I feel like I need to go out of my way to be mean to people who do get the game. And, like, I'm on this podcast to tell you, like, if you're going to get the game, just fucking get the game. Like, just, you've made up your mind, just do it. But you cannot make any kind of decision like that and not expect to also still live in a society that has feelings about it and is therefore going to enact some kind of a consequence about it.
Yeah.
And that consequence comes just by doing something and knowing it. It's kind of like recycling, and stick with me here, this metaphor, I promise it makes sense. It's kind of like doing a thing that's totally normal to you. We grew up in the middle of nowhere, and you just put all your trash in a bin, you take it to the dump, the end. And then I moved to a part of the country where recycling is totally a thing and composting is totally a thing, and you really have to retrain yourself to separate out your garbage and your recycling and to rinse out the glasses and to know what you're, you know, make life easier for all the people doing these terrible, terrible jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Once you learn that habit and once you learn to be a responsible steward on the end of the pipeline that makes the garbage, and I go back to Nevada and I go visit other family and you just throw it all in a bin, I throw it in the bin because I know that's what is done there, but I know, I have like this knowledge now of this is not how it's done everywhere, and this is not necessarily the best way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have thoughts and feelings about it while I'm still doing a thing.
I guess when you find something out, it's hard to go back to a place of innocence.
Exactly. There's no way to unknow something.
Yeah.
And so the more and more this rhetoric of Joanne Rowling's comes out, and the more she kind of doubles down and insists on being this really kind of problematic social figure rather than just, you know, a beloved author of a children's fantasy world.
Yeah.
The more that knowledge comes out and the more you are exposed to it, the harder it becomes to unknow that or to ignore it or to pretend it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, we talked about this in our last episode, the thing that that requires is cognitive dissonance of being, oh, it's not that big of a deal, or I don't care that much about this thing.
Or like, separate the art from the artist, what's the big deal?
Exactly. There are a lot of tools that people are using to justify that yucky feeling, right. And separating the art from the artist is one really big one. Can you kind of explain, like, what that concept is?
One thing that comes to mind is the controversial nature surrounding Michael Jackson.
Okay, that's a great example.
People feel the need to separate him from his music because they still think it sounds really good. It's produced excellently, and, like, you know, it's a really big cultural shift. And with a lot of stories coming out about him and his relationship with children that he worked with, it is quite horrifying to listen to. I even saw that and it was just kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, it changes the way that you listen to it.
Yeah.
It means the difference between finding a used Michael Jackson album and, like, seeing Michael Jackson plushies and posters and memorabilia up for sale at the record store.
Yeah.
One of those things exists, one of those things does not. Mm-hmm. So separating the art from the artist is one really big tool that people are using to kind of rectify and soothe themselves in the middle of this really kind of gut-wrenching process where people want to play this video game, but
they don't want to feel like they're supporting somebody who uses that money to lobby against trans people or, any other minority. Yeah.
The problem there is separating the art from the artist typically is a process that occurs once the artist is dead and no longer profiting or benefiting from their creation. Like the instance you talked about earlier with H.P. Lovecraft. While H.P. Lovecraft was alive, nobody had heard of him. Mm-mm. His books went nowhere. Most of his stuff was published after he died. And so when that happens, it becomes a really different environment through which you analyze their work. You kind of look at it as a historical analog for the time that those works were made.
Right.
And that's not the case with J.K. Rowling, obviously, because she's still alive and kicking.
Yeah.
The other thing that I often see people use is the excuse of there is no ethical consumption under capitalism, which is a very complex theory that, like, deserves to be fleshed out, and I'm not going to do in this podcast episode because you don't deserve that, dear listener.
Yeah.
It's more about, like, the costs of labor and stolen profits, and it's not about, if I buy this thing, I admit it's going to be bad anyway because everything is bad. That's not what that's for.
Yeah.
So let's pivot a little bit directly to the game content itself.
Indeed.
J.K. Rowling has said that she has had no hand in developing or writing the game.
Really?
And that it was a game developer endeavor. And it's interesting the way that she kind of distances herself from it, because as something that is so widely anticipated, you think you would want to, like, take more credit for it.
Right.
But that's not the case. And whatever you want to make of that is whatever you want to make of that. I'm not completely sold on it because, lady, you built the universe that it's in, so it doesn't really fly with me. Yeah. But what do you know about the storyline of the game?
Pretty much nothing.
Yay! We're going to watch a trailer.
Oh, boy.
3, 2, 1.
Boop. In light of your unique situation, joining us as a fifth year, we've devised something extraordinary to ensure you.
Oh, Warner Brothers.
Yeah, a whole bunch of different.
A lot to absorb on your first day.
Can't believe I'm here.
Professor Weasley has asked that your professors give you instruction outside of the ordinary curriculum.
You have much to learn.
You have the benefit of an exceptionally skilled team of witches and wizards to guide you.
A surprised opponent is a weak opponent.
They will
this
test
is pretty
your
long, so,
We leave our legacy in your hands.
Thanks.
Not chills-worthy, but still pretty dope. Pretty dope looking.
All right. A lot of people are super fangirling over the game developers. Another argument or another kind of self-soothing mechanism that we see people employing in order to play this game and not feel so guilty, mm-hmm. is a lot of people are saying, I want to support the game developers. And so I'm buying this game to support the game developers.
Right.
And the game developers have their own issues. There was a game developer on the project that was kicked off the project for being too alt-right on social media.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder where that line is, though. How alt-right do you have to be kicked off of a Harry Potter project?
Did you get anything of the storyline out of that trailer?
Not necessarily. I was kind of confused. There's a lot of cool spells and dragons and hippogriffs and owls and knights.
Yeah, the trailer was definitely made to show off how beautiful the world is and to try and show like how realistic the characters are.
Right.
The actual game during gameplay doesn't seem to be that impressive to me as someone who really loves the open world of like Skyrim and other Xbox games.
Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, exactly. There are tons of video games out there that really scratch that itch.
Oh, yeah.
But the storyline of Hogwarts Legacy is that children... wizarding children specifically, obviously, because they're the only ones that matter. So wizarding children are disappearing, and it turns out that goblins are kidnapping them as part of a goblin uprising.
They wouldn't show that in the trailer.
Yeah. Any idea why that wouldn't make it in the trailer? That's a pretty compelling story.
So I'm thinking of Jewish stereotypes.
Yeah.
You know, they're penny pinchers, and they got big noses, and they steal children, and apparently eat them.
Yeah. Ugh. Do you know what blood libel is?
Blood libel.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of this phrase?
It sounds familiar to me. I think if you defined it, I would definitely be like, oh, yeah.
Well, let me just go ahead and define it for you. If you look it up, you will exactly see where I'm going with this. But blood libel or ritual murder libel is an anti-Semitic canard or trope which falsely accuses Jews of murdering Christian boys in order to use their blood in the performance of religious rituals. That Jews can't do their rituals without human Christian blood.
Oh, never mind. I didn't know what that meant.
This libel, alongside those of well poisoning and host desecration, which means, like, you know, pouring poison into the town well or desecrating the bread that is used for communion in church, became a major theme of the persecution of Jews in Europe from the medieval period to the present day.
Great.
So now that you know the definition of blood libel,
mm-hmm.
does it sound familiar at all?
Yeah, it really does. So that makes me think of modern age conspiracy theories where, you know, people think Jews are running the banks, or, like, leading up to the Holocaust, people were blaming the Jews for, like, inflation and why the economy's trash, and, you know, that just led to a lot of really bad shit. And so I don't think this is very different in that regard.
It's not very promising.
Yeah.
And you can sit back and be like, nah, it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
I understand the desire to do that, but blood libel as an anti-Semitic trope is actually very, very old, and J.K. Rowling doesn't say that she works on the game, but she is a very well-read person, and there are just so many other factors. The goblins in particular, not trolls, not other monsters, not a bad sect of wizardry itself, it is goblins particularly, are kidnapping children for maybe their blood.
Wrong, it's for their plasma.
They're not necessarily kidnapping all of the children for all of their blood, but they do want the blood of the main character, which is a child, for part of a ritual to destroy their enemies. And the goblin uprising is very akin to other Jewish uprisings when they were facing pogroms, and there's a lot of ancient artifacts that the goblins are trying to reclaim as their own, including one that really looks like something called a shofar, which is a Jewish horn.
Oh.
The layers of nuance here just really point to, it's just really on the nose. It might seem totally random. Like, why would this game be so blatantly seeming to be anti-Semitic why? It doesn't make any sense, because you would think it would be against trans people, because that is right. where the author really stands, right?
But I guess those two sentiments kind of go hand in hand.
Do you know why?
Not really, no. Do enlighten me.
You do happen to see them together all the time. There's actually a long history of anti-Semitism and anti-trans rights kind of going together.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of Magnus Hirschfeld?
Doesn't really ring a bell.
So, most people haven't. Magnus Hirschfeld was killed during the Holocaust. Hmm. He was targeted very specifically by Nazis for being Jewish, for being gay. But more importantly, he was a medical doctor, and he was one of the very first to be publishing and researching and talking about the differences between transgender people's anatomy and their experiences. Wow. He was regarded as one of the most influential sexologists of the 20th century.
Wow.
He was incredibly prolific for his time, and who knows how much more research and how farther ahead we would be by now if he wasn't snatched up and killed by the Nazis.
Right.
So there's a very deep intertwined history between these two concepts. Mm-hmm. The Jewish people were very invested in researching and affirming the humanity of trans people at a time when Jewish people were being targeted, because that was very subversive.
Mm.
There's no coincidence that where you see one ism, you often see the other ism. It's not lost on me. I'm a victim of, like, I can't unknow this. I suffer right. that affliction,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just gonna make all of you suffer it with me. You can't unsee it once you see it.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of my gotcha moment.
Huh. So instead of more research into gender-affirming care, we got Nazi horror projects.
Yeah we're not even gonna talk.
It's already a bummer enough as it is.
So that's the game. I'm sorry if I've made it more of a bummer for you than it already was. I did not make the game something else. I just shared a little bit more background mm-hmm. on it, so don't come for me. And it's really hard to want to enjoy this beautiful game. I love an open world game as much as the next person. Mm-hmm. I definitely enjoy playing them, and I'm not trying to tell people that they are wrong for wanting to play such a beautiful game. I get it. I super get it.
Yeah.
And I understand the desire to escape a world that sucks and be in one where you can do magic and fix shit and do things. There's something to be said for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what do you do when everything feels gross? What do you do when you want to escape to this thing that you found really comforting, but it's not as comforting as you wanted it to be? What do you do when you go watch The Little Mermaid again and you realize, ew?
I don't know. In my case, I kind of leave it in the past. Because I used to have, like, I was really into the idea that I was a Hufflepuff.
Yeah, identifying with a thing is really nice.
Man, they always get so much hate because they're dumb and soft, and it's like, well, you know, dumb and soft people can be nice, too.
Heck yeah, I love dumb and soft people.
Yeah. And they eat a lot, and it's like, hey, all right.
Same.
Like, I like food. Like, what's wrong about that?
Heck yeah.
I think for my last 2 years of high school, I bought a Hufflepuff backpack.
Oh, yeah. You know,
and, like, even had a butterbeer candle. Figured out what my wand was.
Yeah, it's really fun to be a part of something.
Yeah, it was just, it's very engaging, I'm not gonna lie.
And the universe is huge and expansive and allows you to engage with it at that level.
Yeah.
Also because it has become incredibly profitable, and so when something is really profitable, you put more work into making it more profitable.
Yeah, now that all this stuff has come out about the author itself, I think I'm very much happy and comfortable with leaving it in the past, where it could still be enjoyed in a nostalgic sort of sense.
Yeah.
But I can't see myself enjoying it nowadays, knowing what I know, and just being more aware of how people can be.
Yeah. I think one valid take is that people refuse to purchase any of her books or games or anything new.
Yeah.
And if you really want to play the game but don't want to support the author, wait a little bit. You'll find a used copy. It'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be great.
Another similar situation with me growing up as a young adult, I discovered the unethical practices of harvesting cocoa for chocolate, like, you know, the whole Ivory Coast sort of deal. And that made me really aware of what I was consuming. And so I pretty much completely stopped buying Hershey products.
Yeah. And it doesn't make Hershey products less tasty, but it's harder to enjoy. Them.
I'm still a Reese's slut. Like, 100%. I mean, peanut butter and chocolate, I'm all over that shit. But I still would like to believe that I am trying to make a conscious effort making the world a better place and by being a more responsible consumer.
Yeah, that's a really good parallel.
Even though, you know, people would have this cynical view of saying there's all these, you know, mega corporations, you can't escape them, they own everything.
I mean, it's true, about five corporations make all of our food, and we're kind of fucked.
Yeah, and you're right, but that's not really something that we as individuals can really influence.
It's true.
You can't monitor every single thing that you buy 100% of the time. It's exhausting.
And that is the concept, no ethical consumption under capitalism. Right. It is about that exhausting kind of state of being.
But damn it, I'm still gonna try.
At what point are we excused from the labor of trying to be responsible with our purchases and with how we live our lives? And you don't have to be responsible in any of those things. You can go drown your house in Hershey's if you want to. It's not necessarily about being able to make a difference, because we all know that these five corporations that make all of our food are pretty fucking huge. And whether or not I do or don't buy one chocolate bar isn't going to make a big difference in it.
Looking at you, Tyson.
I'm not going to be able to dent it as one person. But the other side of it is, do I feel good about myself? And a lot of that, whether or not something makes you feel good about yourself and whether or not feeling good about yourself matters to you, goes back to kind of the premise of the show, of how you are raised to engage with yourself as a person when you're a really little person, when you're a child. A lot of us are raised in an environment where we are automatically bad, where kids are assumed to have bad intentions, where children come out of the womb full of sin or full of evil, and they need to be trained roughly in the ways that they should be. And that informs a lot of the ways we think about ourselves as adults. And I think that really, really comes into play in this conversation of how we consume things.
Yeah, because, like, you don't think of the Ivory Coast when you're 5 years old munching on s'mores.
No!
Not at all.
God forbid.
You're thinking of how much of a good time you're enjoying, you know, with friends and family and the campfire.
Yeah. Finding out all of the shitty labor practices that went into that s'more when you were five doesn't undo that memory, and it doesn't make that memory bad. But it might make you choose differently in how you make a s'more as an adult.
Yeah.
And I think that is the balance that we're trying to strike here. Where it's really difficult to allow yourself joy in the first place. And allowing yourself to maintain the joy that you did find as a child for the things that make you nostalgic is important to hold on to. That doesn't mean that you necessarily try to relive that same nostalgia as an adult and expect it to be the same. Most of the things that we do as an adult when we try to replay things as a kid are not the same. If I was to try and sit on a swing set, my hips would be screaming. My body is not the same. And that's just one small example. Most of the things that we try to recreate as adults aren't going to be the same.
No, and it's not meant to. Because, you know, your perspective changes and grows with you as you live.
Yeah, and that's hard. Change is always hard, whether it's good
or bad. It's hard to accept that sometimes.
We did a whole episode about it. That's what I want to leave off with. Yeah. I don't want to leave off with telling you to not buy a video game if you really, really want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe postpone the way in which you consume it if you're going to. Because if you're going to play the game, you've already made up your mind. You're not going to listen to this podcast to change your mind.
Yeah, no.
And I get that. I'm just some random stranger on a podcast with her sister missing her best friend because now I can't make your mom jokes. Because now they're about my mom, too.
Just read Percy Jackson books. They're great.
Yeah, there are a lot of alternatives.
And, like, Rick Riordan, let me say, is pretty great. Because after, like, the movies that were made from his books, after he saw that they were just kind of a shit show and how it didn't really, like, it didn't really hold true to the books at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even I was, like, bummed about it.
Yeah.
He went on to write all of his books and is like, now there's a gay character and now there's a trans character and like just like kind of like including so many other people, you know, and it's like, go ahead, make movies about those, you cowards.
There are a lot of great fantasy writers and works out there. Most of them don't have the money behind them that the Wizarding World does.
No.
And so they might not be as interactive as what you're used to as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But Ursula K. Le Guin is an excellent fantasy wizard writer who is also a female, if you want to support that specific area of the world.
Heck yeah. I think of my favorite author, Juliette Marillier, who does, like, historical romance fiction.
Ooh, very fun.
There's, like, elements of fey magic and all this cool stuff and, like, people that very can cool. see into the future. It's just like, oh, so good.
What a curse. People are very talented, and a lot of people deserve a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. J.K. Rowling did put out a lot of works, and she did build a universe that people hold very dear. She, unfortunately, is just a really shitty person right now, if you're anyone who is not a woman who looks like her.
Yeah.
So do we want to play a Same Here Man game to wrap up? Because this was kind of a bummer, and I could use it.
Sure.
So we already know that we weren't allowed to read Harry Potter growing up, but I wonder if that's a Same Here Man for anyone in our audience.
Yeah.
So if you were not allowed to read Harry Potter when you grew up, let us know when you first encountered it.
Tell us.
All right, my first one is a little shameless, and I'm just going to go with it.
All right.
I loved Twilight, and I would still read it today.
That is a definitely cannot relate, because the first movie made me so scared as a kid, I actually had to sleep with you in your bed.
Oh, yeah! Aww, we should rewatch it.
It was the ending where he was, like, chomping down on Bella's leg, and I was like, oh no, this is scary. He's a monster.
I don't remember the movies at all.
That's the only scene I remember. I have one that's also shameless, I guess. I wrote fan fiction.
Ooh, can kind of relate.
Oh, yeah?
I was not as prolific as most people, and I have a really hard time with writing. I realized later on in life that that was ADHD.
Yeah.
And possibly dyslexia that went undiagnosed for a very long time. Mm. I'm a terrible speller.
Yeah.
But if I had some of the resources available today, I would probably have a fan fiction podcast if I was a kid right now.
Oh, yeah.
What did you write most fan fiction about?
Okay, so
you don't have to give me details. Please don't give me details.
So the first one I think I kind of quote-unquote wrote fan fiction about was Teen Titans. I made so many, like, Stickman comics with, like, character inserts of me and my friends. So many. I think I still have some in my art bin. That was the first one.
That's amazing.
And then, like, I got so deep into, like, Attack on Titan. Me and my friends would take turns writing, like, a paragraph from, like, our characters' perspectives with our, aww, like, ships with, like, some of the characters.
I love it.
It was so much fun. And, like, I still look back on that, and it was,
it is,
like,
fun. Creating is very fun.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Okay, my next one is I was totally a manga girl, or manga, depending on what kind of a person you are. But I loved to read manga and manga books as a kid. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, it is the comic book form of, like, anime shows.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, like, books.
So this is a can't relate, but I did watch a lot of anime, you know. I just referenced Attack on Titan, so that should probably give you enough clues. but I didn't really read manga as much.
I have not touched a manga in years. Mm. I probably would hate it if I didn't know.
I think the next anime I watched was Howl's Moving Castle, and it's still one of my favorites. Yeah. Hands down.
It's a beautiful movie. I have another bookish same here man, and it is I loved Lemony Snicket books as a kid.
Oh, same here, man.
Yeah.
Oh, one of my best
books
friends.
Are so good.
Me and her would read the series, and it was kind of a competition to see who could read them faster. I won.
Of course.
I think I started in fourth or fifth grade, and then I finished seventh grade. So it was like four whole years of nonstop reading of the series of the Force.
Those books
events.
Are so fun. And the adaptations are so artistic, and it's just so full of whimsy, and I love it. Thanks for playing our bookish same here man game. And thank you again, Frankie, for joining me in the show. It is very weird to record without Marie. I super miss her. Hi, Marie.
We miss you.
You can email the show at samehairmanpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at samehairmanpod or on TikTok, because we're crazy, at samehairman.pod.
You can buy our sweet, sweet merch from samehairman.com if you want to get yourself like a little tote or stickers, pins.
Speaking of pins, if you would like to be seasonal and festive, we have a Happy Diggle Day pin that you can get ready with. That's just around the corner. It's always just around the corner, but it's definitely around the corner right now. Send this episode to your powerhead friends to make them mad or sad or both. Help me find where I misplaced my sorting hat.
It's with the scarf of sexuality. And until next time,
go write super gay Harry Potter fanfiction.